This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everyone. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wyman and Bob is presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort as we edge closer to championship weekend. We'll get a look at what's going on with the Rams. Brady Henderson, who's normally covering the Seahawks, has been given the task to cover the Rams, Dave. So we will talk to him about that coming up at 5 o'clock. We'll talk Seahawks with him as well. We got the professor, John Clayton, coming up at 4 o'clock. We'll attempt to talk to people from each city, but apparently they're proving to be very, very hard to get. Very hard to nail down. Yeah, they're very popular, Dave. Very popular. They need to be coerced. They need to be...
bribed?
Swept off their feet.
How about threatened?
Yeah, well, I don't know if that works over a phone out of state. But, you know, Lefko can be pretty intimidating, so maybe we'll get that done.
But freshly shorn Mike Lefko.
Yeah, yeah, he's high and tight. He's got kind of a military thing going there, so there you go.
I got to follow suit here soon.
Where's the visor? You've been sans visor for a couple of days now.
I know. I thought I'd mix it up a little bit. It was starting to smell. No, I'm kidding. It really wasn't. I wash my hair.
It was starting to smell. That's bad if a visor smells because the top of your head is uncovered, so it should be able to air out. So if you're stinking up a visor, you got something going on.
That's why I don't like wearing hats, because it gets you hot up top, you know? And so the visor, it breathes. But no, I didn't. It's not to the point where, you know how when you wear a hat for a long time, you go out to practice and you sweat and it gets those salt rings around it? Yeah, so it's not to that point yet. But I'll don the visor later. It's part of my my clothing line, so.
Okay. Yeah, you got to display the clothes prominently.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to get into looking at some of the position groups of the Seahawks team from the past season and give them a grade, Dave. I don't know. We'll see who the tougher grader is here, if that's the proper word.
I'm going to say you right off the get-go.
Well, maybe. I think it depends on position group. I think it really does. I can see you really letting the linebackers have it. Maybe I'll be nicer to them than you would be. I think I could, you know, you'll be harsher on the defense perhaps than I would. We'll see. So we'll go, you know, a couple groups at a time throughout the show and open by starting with, you know, what had been my favorite group to complain about. Then we got a couple of years where there was a reprieve, Dave, where they actually was like, wow, they're playing pretty well. They're not elite, but comparatively speaking, playing pretty darn good. And I had really high hopes going into this past season for this team because, as we've said a million times, they had what I thought was one true weakness on the line coming into this season. We're talking about the O-line here. They had one true weakness, in my opinion, and that was left guard. And that was Mike Iupati was there. Yeah. Again, not a shot at him. He just couldn't move. He just physically was not that guy anymore. And obviously he retired. It proved to be the reason he was so limited. But you bring in a guy that was sort of universally praised as one of the better guards in the league in Gabe Jackson. So it felt like, man, if you add him to what you had the year previous, the way they played, this could be a really stout O-line. And they weren't. Just were collectively. It wasn't like, well, Gabe Jackson didn't live up to his billing or Brandon Schell didn't live up to his billing or Damian Lewis or Kyle Fuller or Dwayne Brown. They all failed to live up to their billing. And you look at some of the numbers, they allowed 46 sacks, which is eighth most. So that's top 10 in the NFL. They allowed 48 in 2020, which is interesting. Pro Football Focus, I know you take them or leave them, they rank the O-line 25th in the NFL. Yeah. What their factors are, I'm not entirely sure. Wilson was under pressure on 37% of his dropbacks, according to them. But the final 6 weeks, they averaged 375 yards of offense, 176 yards rushing per game. So how much of that do you put on them? How much do you put on Penny? I put it on both of them. I think they both stepped up. So ultimately, looking at the O-line, looking at all of those numbers, what your expectations were coming into the season versus what they produced, what grade would you give them?
Yeah, I'm going to be a little bit more, well, you know this, Bob. First of all, I'm more forgiving to the players. You know, and I feel like the other thing that's going to complicate this, I'm just qualifying here. The other thing that's going to complicate things is how they were used, and that's coaching, you know, mm-hmm. and so that will kind of affect it. But, you know, I'm going to give him a C plus, just because, you know, Russ, 33 sacks in 14 games. So if you project that out and he has a full season, and you have to count Russ differently, because, I mean, he was he would have been the fifth most sacked quarterback had he, you know, played in every game. So I just, you know, took it sort of at the rate, and he had 33 sacks in 14. That would project to 40. When you look at his career, and like I said, you have to judge him differently, because he holds on to the ball. But, again, cost of doing business. He also makes great plays. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of the sacks, and when Russ talks about getting hit all the time and things like that, some of that's on you, bro. You've got to get rid of the ball. But I wouldn't have him change his game, because he's so good at getting out of trouble. And such a great example. You know, you see everybody has their own little move. Like Rodgers has that, where he'll duck inside the tackle on his right side. And, you know, you see what Mahomes is, just magical and everything. But Russ, that last game against Arizona, he had a little dump off to Travis Homer where it was just beautifully done by him. He stepped up, they reacted, then he shifted, moved to his right, and then took off running outside the pocket. So we don't want to take that away from him. But, you know, if you look at the projection, if he had played in every game, it was 40 sacks. And, you know, the last time he was sacked less than that was his very first year, when he mm-hmm. wasn't really throwing the ball. He had 33 sacks in that game. And also, he didn't have the confidence to hold on to the ball and, you know, make his magic happen. That kind of came in year two, three. But, I mean, you look at in 2018, he was sacked 51 times, 48 times in 2019. 47, as you mentioned, in 2020. So, you know, I feel like, and also they were the number 11 rush game. And as Lefko pointed out, 375 yards in the last, what, five games. Yeah, that a lot of that had to do with Penny, but I'm giving them a little bit more, you know, C+, B- for the offensive line. I would say, and before we get to yours really quick, because I'm very curious, Bob, but Damian Lewis, that was probably the biggest disappointment to me. Is his play, because there were a couple of games where, even if you were not, you know, if you're a novice, and, you know, and all of us compared to Ray Roberts are, but, you know, there was a couple of times where it was glaring where mm-hmm. how Lewis was really bad. So that was, I thought, the most disappointing. And when I think about that, yeah, you're right, Dwayne Brown wasn't up to snuff. They're very limited as far as talent goes at center. Gabe Jackson was okay. Brandon Schell took a step back. But yeah, I feel like some of those sacks are on, as Ray has told us, sometimes it's on the tight end, sometimes it's on the running back, sometimes, and a lot of times, it's on Russ. And not mm-hmm. just because he holds on to the ball, but because, you know, like that sack Chandler Jones, where it was the strip sack for the touchdown, it's like, you got to account for that guy. I mean, you know, somebody didn't block him, but you got to make sure that he is blocked up. You got to make sure you're making all the calls.
Yeah, I'm going to be a little harder on him.
I mean, that's what I figured.
If they're ranked 25th, you're bottom half of the league. You're not mediocre. You're not, a C would be mediocre, obviously. And so I'm going to give him a C-, and I feel like that's being pretty generous based on how they perform, how disappointing they were, really, as a group. It's not one guy. It's not, well, everybody did their job except this guy. No, it was just a weird collective. And I don't know, do you put that on Solari? Is that a combination of Solari and Waldron? I don't really know what led to them collectively as a group taking that step back, because, you know, normally you could find a situation, even in years past when I would be complaining about the line, there would be somebody, you'd be go, well, Dwayne Brown's doing his job, if only he had some help, or so-and-so's doing their job, but, you know, the guys on either side of them aren't. It just, you didn't have that this year. I mean, I thought the center play was atrocious until the end, and Posick played okay at the end, but I thought Kyle Fuller was terrible. Posick, when he first got back in there, I didn't think played well. I thought that was the weakest of the positions on the line, the center play. Mm-hmm. I thought Damian Lewis, we were both so excited about him and what he looked like as a rookie and how he just sort of shrugged off the move from one side to the other, like no big deal. Like, that's a football player. He doesn't care. Just let him play. And, man, he just was not even close to the same guy for whatever reason. It's hard to identify why they didn't play the way we expected them to play. But just you go position by position, and even Big Ray said it when I asked, could you say any one of these guys were equal to or took a step forward from who they were the previous season? He said no. You know, and that's he's the O-line guru. So they just collectively as a group took a step back, some more disappointing than others. So I'm going to give the O-line a C minus. And yeah, I'm not looking at just sacks, because you're right. Russell Wilson will hang on to the ball too long at times. And it is and I'm fine with it, because more good comes out of that than bad by far. He keeps plays alive. He'll make that pass when you think the play is about to come crashing down. So, yeah, sometimes he takes an ill-advised sack. Sometimes he does. And it'll be frustrating in the moment, but in totality, I can live with it. So I don't focus so much on the sack numbers as I do just how quickly is he having to abandon that pocket? How much of a gap or how much of a hole are they opening up for running backs throughout the entire season? Yeah, they did get better toward the end. They certainly did improve, and Penny capitalized on that, and he played really well in those four games. But yeah, if we're going 17 games, I'm going C minus on the O-line. Yeah. D-line. Now this will be interesting. D-line. And talk about, again, I think we both came in with a certain level of expectation in the trenches, and it was all positive. You know, we were looking at the D-line, sort of extrapolating out Carlos Dunlap. Boy, you had him for 8 games the previous year. What's he going to look like in 17 games? They go out and get Kerry Hyder. We look at his numbers when he gets a chance to play. He's productive. Benson Mayoa coming off a productive year. We're going to see what we get out of Daryl Taylor. There was some optimism surrounding this group and their ability to get to the quarterback and provide pressure. They had 34 sacks on the season, which is 23rd in the league. So you're below average there. You're not middle of the pack. Dunlap somehow, some way, had a half a sack through 12 games and ended the season as the leader with 8.5 sacks, which is just amazing. Rasheem Green had 6.5. You had Daryl Taylor, who was a really pleasant surprise, 6.5.
Rasheem Green, 6.5.
Rasheem Green, 6.5, gave you that one. 4 forced fumbles. They were allowed just under 114 yards rushing. That was 17th in the league. They were horrific against the pass. We can get into that. So that's not really a defensive line thing, but just defensively, I think as a group, the defense, but specifically the line for me was a bit disappointing. But what was your grade?
Yeah, I gave them a D, and you know, and this falls into how they were used. And we've talked about it almost every day, Bob, about how much we hate seeing defensive linemen drop back into coverage. So, and then, you know, it, just the whole thing with, I mean, it's a miracle that Dunlap got 8.5 sacks, by the way.
That is really crazy.
Yeah. I really want to kind of little shout out for Carlos Dunlap. His father passed away.
I just saw that the other day.
Yeah, so really, you know, thoughts and prayers for him, because it looked like his dad was, I saw a Twitter thing where he was really involved with his son's career and everything. So, yeah, it was really, really sad for him. But yeah, it was just such a confusing year, and most of that was because how these guys were being used. You know, Daryl Taylor, I got really excited about, but then he disappeared for 4 games where he didn't get any sacks. I mean, he obviously ends up with, you know, 8.5 or 6.5, and he looks like he's going to be an incredible talent. But the other thing, too, you mentioned the 4 forced fumbles, and Lefko put that down, I think, because they had 7, but you're just talking about D-line forced fumbles.
Yeah.
I went and looked at the Rams. I mean, just as an example, they had twice as many. So, yeah. That's a down number. You want to get those strip sacks. And and Taylor was fantastic at certain times. You can see how he's raw, because, you know, I just saw a record number of stunts this year, sacks, and offensive linemen not picking them up. It was like a down year for O-lines around the league as far as picking up a stunt. It's like the most, you know, the guy comes in, the inside guy, and then he loops out. You know the defensive end is going to loop in. And but he didn't run those as smoothly as you can. So I think there's a lot of upside for him, but mostly it was just about, there was lots of times where they didn't get pressure. I think Rasheem Green, like I said, is a really good player, but the fact that, you know, he had 6.5 and that's, you know, for a while there, he was leading the team. And that's twice where, you know, he led the team in 2019 with 4 sacks. That just shouldn't be. You should have somebody like Dunlap who, had he not played like 25, 30% of the snaps a lot of games, maybe he has 12 or 13 instead of 8.5. So that was disappointing to me. And, yeah, I'm giving the D-line just a D just because the way they were used, and I just didn't like that front at all. Is Bob there?
I don't know. We lost Bob here, I guess. Okay.
Oh, okay. You can hear me, Lefko?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
That's strange.
Okay. I thought maybe I was the guy on the outside.
yeah.
All right. Well, okay. Anyway.
Keep going on that. Well, let's see. Bob is gone, so we'll keep going on that.
Yeah. Do you want to get to – should we get to – weigh in D-line on – you're the one that put together all the totals here, and the 4 forced fumbles.
Dave, I thought he was just ignoring you, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Well, and then I thought, I probably cut out, and I just did all of that. That was like the longest
Like Schlereth.
Yeah, exactly.
he's talking, and then he cuts off and makes a point.
Yeah.
Going with a D, and I get that. The usage, the sacks are way down. We saw the impact of the 49ers and the Rams D-lines in the playoffs this weekend. Yeah. So I get where you're coming from there. You know what? I put all these numbers down. I didn't really study it grade-wise, but I would say it's got to be on the low end just because they didn't impact anything.
Yeah.
They didn't impact a game, right? There wasn't a game where you said, wow, the Seahawks won because of the defensive line.
Yeah.
Was there a game where, you know, like, okay, bad example because the Titans lost, but the only reason they were in that playoff game was 9 sacks or the Niners against the Packers, that they were not going to win that game without pressure on the defensive line. So there just wasn't a game where the Seahawks ever made things difficult on the opposing quarterback. How about the Steelers game? They couldn't hit Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And everyone sacked Ben Roethlisberger.
And he's a statue back there, basically. So, yeah. I would say, you know, maybe and they only had 3 sacks, but in the Indy game, I thought they impacted that game pretty well. You know, you had Rasheem Green, Benson Mayoa, and Daryl Taylor all get sacks. And so for like a total of like 30 yards lost. So
Bob is back to chime in, Dave. So we'll let him take over. No one wants to hear my grade. We'll let
Let's
Bob go.
We want to hear you. You just went dark on us, Bob.
You went dark, Bob. You went Schlereth.
All of a sudden, I couldn't hear anything. Nothing.
Yeah. Well, anyway, your grade on D-line, because I think we're probably not going to be able to get to wide receiver, but Mike just put it, I thought, pretty well that, you know, there was never a game where they impacted the game like, you know, you talked about the 49ers, the Rams over the weekend. You know, there was never that game for the Seahawks defensive line.
They're wildly inconsistent. I'd give them a D. I'd give him a D as well, maybe almost a D minus, just because I was so disappointed. Had so many high hopes attached to them. The trenches, I really felt good about coming into the season on both sides of the ball. I was really looking forward to both sides and the anticipation of what they added. Just thought, okay, they're going to be that much better, and this is going to be really working from the middle out. They're going to be solid. That's going to be great, and that's going to open up things and provide some opportunities for the secondary because they're going to be getting to the passer. Nah. It was really disappointing. So I would give the D-line a D, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, another guy I just want, you know, I'm not picking on him or anything, but Puna Ford I thought was going to take a step. You know, there's been a lot leading up to, you know, and he had, like, in 2019, I feel like that was the time where I just remember him flashing. And he didn't really have that game this year, you know, where – you know, you go, wow, look at this guy. Justin Britt talked about him being a Hall of Famer and all that. I know that was a little bit jumping the gun there, but, you know, you just haven't seen that. Now, what do you expect from an undrafted free agent? Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, but after 2-3 years in the league, I forget about where he was taken. I just want to see him impact this, the defense. He really didn't.
All right, let's take 2.
Well, two NFL teams have hired new GMs. The Giants will go with Joe Shane, who spent the past 5 years as the assistant GM for the Bills. And the Bears announced yesterday they hired Ryan Poles, who is the director of player personnel in Kansas City. Now, the Vikings are close, but nothing official yet. They're finalizing a deal with Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, who is the Browns VP of football operations.
Wow, nice job with the name. Just rolled right
practice.
Through that like it was
had to practice
know,
this.
Dave Jones or something. But yeah, I was watching some of this on NFL Network this morning, talking about, you know, the Bears new GM showing up at work at, I think, like 6 in the morning today. They're interviewing Dan Quinn today. So apparently it's single digit temperatures and he's out there ready to get to it. So it's interesting to see. GMs are not the sexy hire. I don't know that we get caught up in GM names like we do head coaches. We're familiar with all the head coaches. GMs are more anonymous, behind the scenes guy. It's hard to have a hardcore opinion on some of those guys, but it's interesting. A lot of the shakeups going on with front offices and what I marvel at even more is Dan Quinn seems to be the hottest coaching prospect we've had in years.
Yeah, I know.
He's up for like 5 jobs.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's funny about the GMs. I'm trying to remember the name of the guy in New England who was, you know, for a long time.
Was it Scott Pioli?
I think Pioli,
like that?
Yeah. Yeah. And but then that it just got taken over by, by Belichick. I mean, he's kind of the guy now. And you're right. The GM has been kind of de-emphasized. I mean, you look at it here, and I think Schneider does a really good job. And, you know, finding guys later. And then, you know, we hear these stories about how he doesn't necessarily have, final say on it. So, yeah, it's something that's been kind of, you're more excited about hearing about the head coach. And what do we get, 9 openings now?
Yep.
Yeah, we're going to dive into those head coaching openings more at 3 o'clock, but what seemed to be a done deal between Byron Leftwich and the Jags has not officially been finalized. Now, a few reports were circling yesterday that the former Jags quarterback would be their next head coach, but today, the consensus seems to be that it's still an open and ongoing process. There's 3 finalists. Byron Leftwich is one of them. There's also Matt Eberflus and Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah, Eberflus, I know, is the D coordinator in Indy, right?
Yes.
Is it Flus or Fluss?
I think it's Fluss.
I think it's Flus, isn't it?
Fluss?
I thought it was Flus.
Let's get
tomato,
him on the line.
Tomato, tomato. Whatever. But
we'll ask Clayton.
Yeah, he'll know for sure. No. He's good with names. He's super good. I saw on the crawl on NFL Network that Leftwich was going in for a second interview today, apparently. So maybe they're, dotting the I's, crossing the T's. Who knows? But good for him. He's one of the hot young names out there. I'm still waiting to see what happens with Eric Bieniemy. That's the one that I sort of scratched my head at, because he seemed to be one of the hottest names last year. And he's been in the trenches for a while. Leftwich gets a job, awesome. But he's a young guy. He hasn't been, doing this, the grind year in, year out the way Bieniemy has. And not that Bieniemy's that old, but he's been around longer and been a candidate longer. So I'd really like to see him get a gig. And Clayton said the problem with him is he curses too much, which I find hard to believe is going to be, a factor that an owner takes into consideration, saying, well, he's got a brilliant football mind and could win us a Super Bowl, but I don't like the language he uses.
Well, it was one of those things that just gets said, I think. Bieniemy, he was a fiery player, too. I played at the same time he did, and I remember I didn't like him. Because he was always talking, man. Yeah, maybe. San Diego, the first 4 years of his career. So, yeah, and then, you look at Bowles and Leftwich are kind of the stoic guys and not real fiery guys. But, as far as the Jags go, and like Mike said, we'll get into this later, but they got $72 million in cap. So, but again, that organization, I just think it really matters who's at the top.
Yeah, and you got a meddling owner in Shad Khan, too. So I don't know how appealing that is or is not, but first-time coach, you can't be that choosy, I suppose. All right, Take 2 is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife, swedish.org/cyberknifeprostate. Coming up, our end-of-the-season report cards continue with perhaps 2 of the most argued-about positions on the roster, the running backs and the linebackers. That's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, or at 4 o'clock, I should say, John Clayton will join us on the program. We'll speak with Brady Henderson at 5 o'clock, talk some Seahawks and some Rams with him. He's been out there covering the Rams during the playoff run. But now we continue with our grades, and you guys can text in 421-3776, 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. You want to give your grades on these position groups as we go through them, feel free. We'll compare, contrast, see if how close we are in agreement, but let's take a look at the running backs, Dave, which interesting, to say the very least. Obviously, Chris Carson, if we're going to go individually, he gets an incomplete. He only played four games, had 54 carries, three touchdowns, 232 yards and a fumble. Rashad Penny played 10 games, had 119 carries, 749 yards, six touchdowns. Final five games is where he truly made his mark. He had four electric games in there. And then Alex Collins, who was kind of the unsung hero, if you will, just kind of kept him afloat. Not that he was an electric runner or anything, but, you know, after Carson went down, Penny still physically wasn't where he needed to be. Collins was your guy, you know, along with DJ Dallas and Homer chipping in. But, you know, he played in 11 games before he got hurt, 108 carries, 411 yards and two touchdowns for Collins. So looking at that, what grade do you give the backs?
Yeah, I'm going to give them a B minus. Because, and nothing's going to be great, you know, this year, obviously. Maybe if we get to say, you know, safety, I don't know. We'll get to that when we get to it. But just, you know, just in general, it was just a year, you know. I mean, they missed the playoffs. And Alex Collins, I don't know how to describe him. Like, at the time when he was out there and filling in, you just go, what's to not like about this guy? I mean, he ran hard. You know, I thought he made good decisions. You remember that drive when they came out of the locker room at halftime in Pittsburgh? I mean, he was just an animal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just looked really good. But you just also see in a lot of situations that he just has, much like, you know, I talked about the center position, he just has a ceiling that, you know, it's not. I don't think Alex Collins can be great. You look at Chris Carson and Rashad Penny and you think, yeah, those guys can be great. We know Chris Carson can be great. Penny is another story. But yeah, as far as the running backs go, I thought, you know, but with Penny, it's just the further we get away from the season, the more I'm starting to be skeptical of him once again. You know, it's like
caught up in the recency bias.
Yeah, I mean, it looked so good, but I mean, you have to say, wow. I mean, even if, you know, and my thing with him was that I feel like Peterson, who's a super tough guy, right? I mean, that guy, him and Frank Gore, probably the, you know, Jim Brown, probably the three toughest running backs. I mean, I'd make that case for Emmett Smith too. Emmett was tough, man. But, yeah, and he said something that clicked. And, you know, made it work. But why did it take that long? How come in, you know, 4 years? And it's funny, like, I always talk about this moment, but when I was interviewing him and I said, you should run people over, I remember he looked at me and goes, yeah, you're right. I'm like, what?
How has that not occurred to you before?
I'm a guy that last time I played was 1995. You probably weren't even born yet. And you know, it didn't occur to him. You're a big, stout dude. And he even said that this year. He's like, yeah, I'm a big guy. I'm like, yeah, we know that. You should have known that. So anyway, I love everything that he did. Like you said, Bob, he is the nicest kid. You really want to, it's like Ryan Neal on the defense. You really want him to do well because he's such a good guy. And such a good guy to have on your roster. But yeah, I'm more, the further, like I said, we get away, the more I'm thinking, okay, if you sign him, you better make sure that he's not going to break the bank or anything like that unless he plays not up to even this standard, 134 yards a game. I mean, you're not necessarily thinking that. I mean, that would be through the roof, but you're thinking, hey, you've got to have, you know, over 100 yards you know, four or five times, and, you know, the others, you know, be in the, you know, anywhere between 50 and 80, catch the ball, things like that. So, yeah, I'm a B minus.
B minus. I'll go, I'm kind of in the same area. I'd probably go a little less, C plus. You know, I mean, because collectively as a group, whether he was on fire at the end of the season or not, just what did they do in totality as a group of running backs? Eh, they were okay for various reasons. I mean, injuries, Chris Carson only played four games. You know, Rashad Penny had four good games. You can look at, you know, his other, I'm looking at his game-by-game stats. I mean, he had a game, 10 carries, 35 yards, 11 carries, 39 yards, 7 carries, 7 yards, you know, 6 carries, 9 yards, 2 carries, 8 yards. I mean, he just, there are a lot of these moments where he was in there, sometimes not very much at all. Sometimes, you know, again, 10 carries, 11 carries, under 40 yards. Those aren't good games. So he had four tremendous games. And then you look at the other six and go, okay, he was sort of just not really even present. You know, DJ Dallas is who he is. These are complimentary backs, Alex Collins. So as a group, I would give him a C+. I would say they were okay, you know, and the late season surge helped bring it up. Otherwise, I'm looking at a C or maybe even a C-, but that late season surge definitely helped. All right, linebackers, Dave. Here you go. Yeah. Here you go. Jordan Brooks, 184 tackles, a sack, 10 tackles for a loss, 5 passes defended. Bobby Wagner, 170 tackles, a sack, 3 tackles for a loss, 5 passes defended, an interception and a forced fumble.
Yeah.
And then Brooks had a fumble recovery as well. So how do you grade the linebackers?
Yeah, I'm going to be tough, man. I'm going to go C- because, look, Jordan Brooks, did he do anything wrong? No, not really. And, again, this goes to – I mean, no, he did. I mean, look, he had his moments. He had the worst drive a linebacker could have in that last game where he misses two tackles. And then, I mean, it was a really good throw and catch, but he had the deep crosser and the guy they completed the pass on him. So – yeah, it was pretty glaring, and he's had those kinds of mistakes. But just, again, it goes back to the way that they were playing Bobby. And this is another one of my complaints I was going to bring up with the D-line as far as getting sacks. Blitz him. He is a great blitzer. Remember in the game against San Francisco in 2020 where he had the two sacks and the four quarterback hits? And he's so good at that. And that was against the Niners, you know, and the Niners known for, you know, being very – brainy as far as, you know, picking up things, and they know how to handle pretty much any defense, and he got through and he got home. So they didn't do that. They also didn't have him attacking the line of scrimmage, you know, and you can't have that. You watch the 49er linebackers over the weekend. Those guys are just, you know, downhill the second they read run. I thought Bobby was kind of slow on some of his reads where it's like, okay, it's a pass, man. Everybody is standing straight up and you're still, you know, going towards the line of scrimmage. So, but, you know, it's hard to say, you know, that was all his fault. And then, you know, Jordan Brooks, I mean, he didn't, like I said, he did a couple things wrong, but 184 tackles, a sack. I mean, I like to see him get his pick, but, you know, I mean, some of those times out there, I'd rather see Nick Ballore out there and Cody Barton. And I thought Cody filled in great, but Jordan Brooks, everybody talks about Cody Barton, how I love him and all that stuff, but Jordan Brooks is my favorite linebacker to watch on this team.
So your grade is what again?
C-.
C-. I'll give him a little bit better. I'll give him just a straight C. I think Jordan Brooks played really well. I like Cody in the short amount of time we saw him. Bobby had a good year. He didn't have an all-pro year, in my opinion, even though he got that honor. I didn't think he played like an all-pro, but I didn't think he was a liability week in, week out. I just say that they were C and really helped out by the season of Jordan Brooks. All right, coming up is the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame outdated, or is the voting process working exactly like it should? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We'll continue with our position group grades throughout the show, but want to talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame voting. In case you missed it yesterday, just one name, one man making his way into baseball's Hall of Fame this year from all the ballots cast. David Ortiz got 77.9% of the vote. You need 75% to get in. So Barry Bonds missed it, 66%. Clemens, 65.2%. And what's interesting is I saw, you know, a lot of articles come out last night sort of championing Bonds all of a sudden. All of a sudden, Bonds is a victim. Poor guy. Boy, they got it wrong. How is he not in there? This is a travesty. You know, when you just go back a couple of years ago and it was like, this guy should never even sniff the Hall of Fame. And you know, it just, I guess, feelings soften over the years. You get different voters and their percentages have gone up. But I saw a question from one of our texters, and again, you guys can text in whenever you'd like, 421-3776, 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. And they were essentially, I'll paraphrase because I don't remember exactly how they worded it, but essentially asking, hey, if Bonds and Clemens were nicer to the media, do you think this would have been different? I don't know. I don't know. You know, that's there are a lot of voters. It's hard to, you know, determine who holds a grudge and who doesn't, who's able just to, you know, compartmentalize and say, yeah, the guy was a complete creep, but here I'm voting on who he was as a player, not who he was to the media. I'm not sure because David Ortiz, by all accounts, I only interviewed David Ortiz, I think, twice in my entire career. He was very friendly both times. I interviewed Clemens once. He was actually very nice to me, but by all accounts, he was prickly, to say the least, and hard to get along with. And Bonds, I had an interaction with in a locker room where he was a complete jerk and lived up to his billing. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know how much that impacts, you know, individual voters. I'm sure some of them probably do hold a grudge. Those that had to maybe encounter those guys, maybe they were beat writers for the Pirates and beat writers for the Giants and had to deal with them on a, you know, 162 game basis every year. That could get tiring if the guy's a creep. So maybe it's hard to hold those feelings out of it, but I don't look at this and say, well, they screwed it up. They've got a right or wrong here. I think that you vote your conscience. And I think steroids is a tricky issue because it wasn't technically against baseball's rules. And the league certainly benefited from it. Bud Selig sort of turned a blind eye to it. He's in the Hall of Fame. He knew what was going on. He played dumb. And it helped sort of bring the game back to some level of prominence after the cancellation of the World Series. You had the home run chase between, you know, Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire. You had Cal Ripken chasing that record. So that helped bring it back into the forefront after, you know, you missed a World Series, man, because of a work stoppage. So it's a really convoluted topic, Dave. But in the grand scheme of things, do I think they got it wrong? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah, well, I think also, isn't it about a lot of these guys weren't present. I just think it would, you know, they weren't present, they weren't witnessing it, they're just looking at the stats. They didn't, you know, go through, like, you remember Barry Bonds. You said it yesterday, never hit over 50, and then at age 37, he hits what, over 70?
73.
Yeah, so, I mean, you kind of witness that. People just see highlights now, and if they're, you know, younger voters, or they weren't paying attention to baseball at that time. So, you know, I think that is going to change it a little bit. The other thing is, what was the trophy that Ron Francis, the GM, one in hockey? It's like the Lady Bing trophy, and it's about being a gentleman on the ice and off the ice. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, if you're the voter, you went through that, Bob, with, you know, somebody yelling at you and things like that. It has to affect you. It has to affect your voting. And I'm not saying that you would do something that's wrong, but you would. It's not like you're rooting for that guy, right? I mean, he was a total ass, and, you know, and I feel like that has to be part of it. It has to, and you know, for those guys to then, you know, whine and cry about it after you're being a total jerk, they shouldn't really have much to whine about. So I don't know, the voting and how those guys are handling it. I feel like it's different for people that were there and lived through the whole thing.
Yeah, and. I would like to think if I had a vote that I would be able to remove personal interaction from it. What my biggest complaint with the voters is just consistency. because I feel like they've found this little mini loophole to say, well, I'm going to vote for this steroid user, but I'm not going to vote for that one because this guy technically did it before it was against baseball's rules, which to me is a complete cop-out. They knew they were doing something wrong, but saying it, well, it wasn't written into baseball's rules, so all's fair in love and war. Okay, if that helps you rationalize your vote. To me, it's more all or nothing. I'm either going to vote for the steroid guys or I'm not going to vote for any of them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just I think bridging the gap between the two is, you know, I'm going to vote for Bonds and Clemens, but I'm not going to vote for A-Rod, who's number four all time in home runs, four away from 700, I believe, or four or six. And Sammy Sosa over 600 home runs. Manny Ramirez, one of the greatest right-handed hitters in all of baseball. Listen, if you're just saying, hey, anybody attached to steroids, I'm not voting for it. Awesome. I can live with it. Or, hey, those guys played in that era, and we don't know for a fact who was and who was not doing it. So I'm just going to go on their merits, their numbers. Awesome. I can live it. Just be consistent. To me, that's a loophole, saying, you know, yeah, this guy didn't technically get caught, or this guy didn't technically do it before. He did it before it was technically against the rules. To me, that doesn't wash.
Yeah, it's interesting. Some of the textures and some of the things. MLB's new slogan, it's not, this is JD in the 509, it's not what you know, it's what you can prove. Hypocrites. And then also somebody was talking about, are you going to talk about the balls that baseball was using during the home run chase era? They were basically bouncy balls.
So, yeah, I don't know. They mess with the balls every year. I don't know how much more lively they were that year. I don't think it was like hitting a golf ball, but you know, they mess with them every single year. We hear about the balls and different incarnations of the ball. They're always messing with it. So, you know, I think what was happening was much more about what was being ingested as opposed to what kind of ball they were hitting. All right, coming up, there are 9 head coach openings in the NFL. 9. Which desirable ones could impact the Seahawks? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.